I'm Nick Spitzer. Coming up, our interview and music with banjo ubermensch Bela Fleck. But first, one of his major inspirations, Earl Scruggs, and also the late Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead, himself influenced by Scruggs and players from Clarence Ashley to Pete Seeger. We'll hear a brief conversation with Jerry. Here's Garcia playing banjo with the new Riders of the Purple Sage on American Roots.
Well, somebody robbed the Glendale train this morning at 9:30. Somebody robbed the Glendale train, and I swear I ain't lying. They made clean off with 16 G's and left 2 men lying cold. Somebody robbed the Glendale train and they made up with the gold. Now Charlie Jones was the engineer, he had 20 years on the line. He kissed his wife at the station gate this morning at 6:35. Everything went fine till 9:30 when Charlie looked up and he saw there was men on horses, men with guns, and no sign of the law. And somebody robbed the Glendale train this morning at 9:30. Somebody robbed the Glendale train, and I swear I lied. They made clean off with 16 G's and left 2 men lying cold. Somebody robbed the Glendale train and they made up with the gold. Amos White was the baggage man and he dearly loved his job. The company, they rewarded him with a golden watch and fob. Well, Amos, he was a mark in time when the door blew off his car. They found Amos White in 15 pieces, 15 miles apart. And somebody robbed the Glendale train this morning at 9:30. Somebody robbed the Glendale train, and I swear I lied. They made clean off with 16 G's and left 2 men lying cold. Somebody robbed the Glendale train, and they made off with the gold. I said somebody robbed the Glendale train, and they made off with the gold.
Somehow or another, a friend of mine maybe loaned me a record, an old Flat Scruggs record called Country Music. But I remember when I heard this record, there was something very resonant about it, you know what I mean? But when I heard that banjo, you know, Earl Scruggs playing 5-string banjo, I had to make that sound. You know, there was something about the banjo, I wanted it to sound exactly like that. That was important to me. And if it wasn't for the complexity of it and the stunning effect it had on me, I would never have bothered.
But you did something once. I think you were telling me about, you took one of the Folkways records, one of the banjo records, and you were slowing them down.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's one of the things you can do with them. And also, the old phonographs used to have, for some reason, 16 on there. You remember those? Conveniently, it's just about half of 33, and it slows it down to a full octave so you don't have to retune. You know?
That's perfect.
Yeah. I mean, Scruggs-style banjo slowed down. It's wonderfully far outside, and he likes sound like bells, bong, bong, you know, and the syncopation, the interior of what's going on there is absolutely incredible. When you get down to that level of detail, I mean, it's the only way to figure it out. It's zipping along. If it's something like Foggy Mountain Breakdown, the notes are happening about as fast as you can perceive them, you know, they're really zipping along.
Thank you. This is Earl Scruggs. Please stay tuned for American Roots.
Earl, what advice would you give to young, up-and-coming banjo pickers today and bluegrass musicians?
Yeah, main thing is to be serious about it. Don't take it for granted. Once you let up, somebody will pass you like you're sitting still. And you're not in a contest for sure, but you don't have no time to sit down and let somebody pass you up. And if you love music, you ain't going to sit down and do it anyway. You're going to keep picking, especially if you got good pickers to pick with.
Earl Scruggs, the innovative master of three-finger style picking, backed by guitarist Lester Flatt. Earl told us that after being wary of working on the Beverly Hillbillies for how it would portray mountain people, he thought it was good fun and well produced. So apparently did our guest, Billy Fleck. Bella Anton Leos Fleck was raised in New York's Upper West Side. His father named him after composers Bela Bartok, Anton Dvorak, and Leos Janacek. Bela loved the Beatles. Then he heard Earl Scruggs playing that Ballad of Jed Clampett. He says that it rocked his world. Bela's love of the banjo led him to progressive player Tony Trischka. Eventually, Bela Fleck reset his course to old-time country banjo.
I think I had a little ego thing going on from, like, you know, having access to the most advanced ways of playing the banjo at that time. And I wasn't prioritizing the traditional stuff. I played in a band called Tasty Licks after high school for 3 years. Thought I was doing pretty good at playing the banjo and suddenly realized, oh, wait, this traditional stuff is really serious. It's really cool, and I can't do it very well. I decided to move down south to Lexington, Kentucky, where J.D. Crowe lived. I didn't want to be stigmatized as a northern banjo player. I figured the closest I could get to playing like Crow would be to play with guys who played with him and kind of pick up some of the feel of what he did from them.
What have they done to the old home place? Why did they tear it down? And why did I leave the plow in the field and look for a job in the town?
I remember playing the Holiday Inn, which is where a lot of bluegrass people played. And J.D. Crowe would play there with his band, and I mean, everybody came through there, and they would have three-week stints. Some of the people that really knew Crowe very well came and saw us play and kind of just told me I sucked, that I didn't know how to get a good sound out of the banjo, and I had a crappy banjo, and it was a real wake-up call. And they actually did it out of some sort of tough love kind of thing. Mm.
Tell me a little bit about the Newgrass Revival, because, I mean, that's a band that had wide acclaim and visibility and had controversy around it from some of the so-called purists or old-time bluegrass
folks. Sure. Well, I met Sam Bush when I was still living in Boston, and I was in Tasty Licks, and I got to make my first solo record on Rounder, and he played on my first album. He contacted me after I was living in Kentucky for a while, and eventually I joined Newgrass, and that was 1981. And it was really a perfect place for me because those guys were into all kinds of music and they were into jamming and there was room for me to stretch out and try the things I was developing. And also there was a lot for me to learn from those guys about roots music, actually, and about blues and rock and things that I wasn't really paying attention to. I was paying attention to jazz and I was paying attention to bluegrass. And that was it.
About basically becoming Bela Fleck and the Flecktones. Obviously, that's different than the ensemble with Newgrass.
Well, I was continuing to make solo records on Rounder through the 80s while I was in Newgrass and coming up with this kind of complicated music and dragging my poor bluegrass friends into it, you know, like the Sam Bushes and Jerry Douglases. They would do it and they enjoyed it, but there were certain times when it would be like, Sam would say, too much brains, Bela, too much brains. I'd be like, yeah, okay, okay. I started to try and think about, well, maybe I just, it'd be good to do some of these kinds of tunes with guys outside the bluegrass scene. And I started finding people in Nashville I could start to do that with. Victor Wooten started turned up in my life said, hey, I play the bass, and can I play something for you over the phone? And it was amazing. And then I met Howard Levy, harmonica and piano player. He's a monster. And Future Man is Victor's brother.
Percussion.
His electric drum that was like a guitar. So that was really exciting. We weren't looking to play it safe. You know, at that point, we were like, this was our art project. We're just going to have it be bold and fun. The bluegrass thing, I felt like if I continued on, I would become bored, yeah, and I would run out of things, and I'd be trying to push it into something that it wasn't,
right,
rather than going out to other places and learning a lot more.
You tackle Aaron Copland's Hoedown. You bring something special to that.
Thanks. I think what I loved about it the most was actually he was lifting these great traditional Irish tunes. I mean, did you ever see The Devil, Uncle Joe? I think that's the melody that's in Hoedown. And then there was this rock version of it that Emerson, Lake, and Palmer did that I used to love. And I was thinking about those two things, you know, always wanting to do that someday.
How did your classical recording come about, the Perpetual Motion album from 2001?
Well, at that time, I was just signed to Sony Records, and I had this really interesting deal because my friend Edgar Meyer was on Sony, and I was interesting to the classical people over there as well because I'd done a record with him on the classical side. I ended up talking to this fellow named Peter Gelb, who ran it at the time. Then we had this idea together about just doing some of the great classical pieces that, if a violinist did it, it'd be like, oh no, not another version. But if it was on the banjo, it would really be different. And not only that, I'd get to play these pieces that I was familiar with and curious about. So it was just one of those win-win things, but it was so hard to do.
For Grammys, you've been nominated in classical and jazz and country and pop and world. I mean, the answer is yes when it comes to genre, it seems
well,
to me.
Well, I've done better than I ever could have imagined. And so the weird thing about that is that when you do better than you thought you were going to do, when everything you hoped you would happen happens, you've got to figure out, well, am I done now? I mean, is it time to retire in my early 50s? Or
right,
you have to redefine your goals and look at things differently. I just want to be a good musician and play music that has some heart to it and has some interest. And I really just play the same way I play all the time. I react to who I'm playing with. So if I'm playing with an African musician, I react to what they're playing, but I'm still playing, you know, what comes out of me. Same thing if I'm playing bluegrass. I react to everyone I'm around, and I insert my own thoughts as they come up. I just have to be myself, and then it seems to work.
Beyond the world of classical, you've also traveled out into the world of world music and did, as part of your Tales from the Acoustic Planet, Africa sessions.
I went to four different countries, and every country had a completely different system and approach to it. And I was in the east in Uganda and Tanzania, and I was in the west in Mali and the Gambia. In the Gambia, you have this instrument called the akanting that is really seems clearly to be a banjo forebear.
After all these years, you seem to still love this instrument.
I do. And there's still a lot of things that I haven't done that I'm really enjoying the experience of trying to do. And like, I just finished my first banjo concerto, which I wrote the whole thing from scratch, you know, orchestrations and everything, 35 minutes of brain-scrambling music. And, and I'm really proud of it. And that's something that checked off my list now I got to do.
You've done so much. What do you do now at mid-century in your life?
Well, I'm addicted to that, the buzz of working on something new and finding a way to do it and figuring out solutions to things. That's how I work. So one possibility is this whole idea of creating a classical repertoire. So maybe just writing these banjo sonatas, solo banjo works, would be an interesting thing to do as I continue along.
Bela Fleck, I want to thank you for composing for, playing, and still loving the banjo after all these years.
Oh, man, it's my pleasure.
Banjo polymath Bela Fleck. He stopped by our studios in New Orleans before the Flecktone show at the House of Blues. Hey, if you get a chance, listen to our interview with Bela Fleck's hero, Earl Scruggs, at our website, AmericanRoots.org. Jerry Garcia is also there. And we'll be back with more banjo heads, including Steve Martin, when American Roots returns.